Well, happy Beltane, everybody. Beltane is a pagan holiday. It was celebrated in several parts of Northern Europe, but most closely associated with the Gaelic culture of Ireland. In the 20th century, it was revived in America by what we call neo-pagans. And so Beltane can be seen as belonging to that category of earth-centered traditions that form the sixth source of our Unitarian Universalist faith. Beltane is celebrated on the 1st of May, May Day. The 1st of May was the traditional start of summer. In our modern practice, we start the seasons on the solstices and the equinoxes, so spring started on March 21st, and summer won't begin until June 21st. That puts May 1st still in the middle of spring. But traditional calendars started the seasons midway between the solstices and the equinoxes, so spring started in early February, when the growing light of the new year in northern latitudes would have started to become noticeable. And summer began at the beginning of May, after the season of planting, and when the crops are just starting to show above the ground and begin their growth phase. If you know Shakespeare and you've always wondered about the date for Midsummer's Night, it's not in July or August. Midsummer is June 21st. Midway between the start of summer on May 1st and the start of the harvest season in August. The neo-pagan calendar of holidays, or Sabbaths as they call them, celebrates the solstices and the equinoxes and also the four what they call cross-quarter days, midway between the solstices and equinoxes. So it's a wheel of the year that has eight festivals. As the wheel turns each year, it runs through a cycle of planting, growing, harvesting, and resting. The rhythms of agriculture line out a religious calendar for managing our spiritual lives. Whether we are farmers or accountants or ministers or Uber drivers, we need time for planning and preparing in our lives, a time for labor and growing, a time for celebrating what we have created and consolidating our achievements for the future, and then a time of spiritual rest, where we step back and slow down because finite animal bodies cannot be constantly at work. Our personal spiritual cycles probably don't turn exactly in tune with the annual cycle of the seasons, but that's okay. These are symbolic lessons. They're not literal. So today you might be starting something new, or you might be in the middle of some important work. Maybe you've just finished some big project, or maybe you are today taking a Sabbath before you start something new. But most likely you're probably in the midst of several simultaneous cycles. So you're finishing one project while you start a second, while you're in the middle of another, while you're also trying somehow to find some time to rest amid the many ongoing responsibilities. We don't live our lives exactly aligned with the seasons, and I don't really imagine that the rural folks of Ireland did either. The seasonal holidays, when they come, shouldn't be taken as enforceable commandments to align our lives with their cycle of growth and rest. So instead, take them as reminders that whatever projects you undertake in life, however large or long or layered on top of each other they are, all of our work needs to come in these four phases. We plant, we grow, we harvest, and then we rest. And all four of those phases should be attended to equally: planning and preparing, working and growing, harvesting and storing, and then resting and dreaming new dreams. In the cycle of our church year, we do our planning and preparing in August. Then the church year begins in September. We work the church year through May. We celebrate the past in June, and then we rest in July and start again. So we're coming towards the close of one church year cycle. In the pagan cycle, though, we're near the beginning of the cycle. So Beltane is the first day of summer, the beginning of the season of work and growth. In most places around the world, May Day is marked as the International Labor Day, which is a good fit for Beltane, because Beltane is all about harnessing that summertime energy and then using it for work and growth. Halfway past the vernal equinox now, the sun visibly dominates the sky. The days are noticeably longer than the nights now. The earth is feeling again the sun's energy. The air is warm. The ground is warm. Shepherds moved their livestock from the winter pastures to their summer pastures, and what we planted in March and April is now rising from the ground. So this is the season of highest fertility and creativity. It was traditionally a day for lovers and for marriages. We celebrate Beltane with a maypole, which we did before the second service here. The maypole is a phallic symbol wrapped in ribbons to contain the creative energy and then to direct it toward making good and joy. Etymologically, Beltane means bright fire. It refers to the power of the sun, which is prominent now in the sky. Bel means bright or white. It's the same root word that gives us the name for the Baltic Sea or Belarus, which we call white Russia. And tane means fire. So Beltane, bright fire, is traditionally celebrated with fire rituals to bring the power of the sun close to us. Communal bonfires would be lit, with individuals then lighting their household fires from the common bonfire. And people would leap over the fire or put themselves in the path of the smoke as a way to purify themselves and to protect themselves from diseases. And cattle would be driven through the bonfire or the smoke also to protect them from diseases for the coming year. So next year, if we celebrate Beltane again, it might be appropriate to have a barbecue. Be appropriate for the day. So as spring now turns to summer, we are aware this morning that the sun's warmth, which feels so good today, is also coming with a menace for how it's likely to feel a few months from now. The energy of the sun is both a blessing and a threat. And thinking about that and talking about it with my husband, he reminded me of the story of Icarus. So Daedalus, who had created the labyrinth on Crete to imprison the Minotaur, was himself then imprisoned by the king, Minos, who refused to let him leave again. Daedalus, being a genius inventor, realized that although the sea was closed to him, Minos couldn't control the sky. So Daedalus diligently collected feathers from the birds that would visit him in his exile, and then he constructed two great pairs of wings, one for him and one for his son, Icarus. Then he used wax to glue the feathers he had collected onto the frames. When the wings were done, he strapped on his wings, and then he hovered in the air above his son, showing Icarus how they could use the wings to escape the island. Icarus was eager. But Daedalus warned his son that this was serious business. "Follow me closely," he says. "Stay close to the middle way. Flying too low, the wings will collect the moisture of the sea, and the weight of the water will drag you down. Fly too high, the heat of the sun will melt the wax, and the feathers will fall from the frame." Icarus delighted in his wings. He felt the freedom, the power, the joy. Daedalus warned him again, and off they flew. Daedalus flew in front to show the way, but he couldn't look back to keep an eye on his son. Icarus was enraptured by the flying. For him, this wasn't an escape from Crete, but an escape from all that holds back the spirit, and the new felt power and energy surging in a young man. He felt alive and free. He flew up and up, thrilling into space. And then, closer to the sun, the same energy that gives us all light and our life grew intense. The wax on his wings began to melt. The feathers that lifted Icarus into the air and held him there began to loosen. by the time he noticed it was too late. Too many feathers had already fallen, more were falling. The brilliant wings his father had made, now bedraggled, could no longer support the weight of a man, and down he plummeted into the sea and beneath the waves. His father, flying ahead, may have heard the splash. It's a story that we tell as a warning to pride. Maybe it's a story of the hubris of man to venture beyond our natural bounds. It's also a story that warns us that the powers that energize us can also overwhelm us if we indulge too liberally. The sun that encourages the new shoots to grow in May can burn the crops in August. The bonfire provides warmth and light and cooks the barbecue. It's exciting to play with the danger of fire, leaping over it to prove our courage and to receive the benefit of the healing qualities. But what heals us in moderation can harm us in too strong a dose. Lately, as I've been getting older, I noticed that I can't drink as much as I used to. Alcohol is still a pleasure for me, but I have to be careful not to drink more than I can tolerate. So recently I've come up with a new mantra for myself around alcohol. If I feel like having a drink of an evening or at a party, I will say to myself, "Would you like a drink? Have one." Have one, which means you're welcome to have a drink, but have one, meaning don't have two. Enjoy the pleasures of the world. Enjoy the beauty, the joy. Participate. Join the dance. Sing along. If the village wants to take a day off to jump over bonfires, go do it. Have fun. Join the feast. Have a drink. Have one. But have one. Take the middle way. Denying yourself the pleasures of life is like flying too close to the sea. What are wings for if you're merely going to hover over the ground at the same height that you stand? Abstinence and denial are like weights that can pull us down into depression. The world is here to enjoy. As the character Shug Avery says in Alice Walker's book, The Color Purple, "I think it pisses God off when you walk by the color purple in a field and don't notice." The Buddha realized when he met the religious ascetics of his day who resolved to abjure all pleasures in the pursuit of spiritual health, that those who deny pleasure are often just as obsessed with the things they deny as are the people who overindulge in pleasure. One obsesses lustfully over the pleasures they consume. The other obsesses self-righteously about the pleasures they renounce. Spiritually, it amounts to the same attachment, and thus the same spiritual danger. The middle way is to engage with the energy of the world, but not let it burn you up or melt your wax. Think of the male sexual energy that's symbolized by the maypole. Male energy is a good thing. I'm a fan. But our recent cultural conversations around gun violence and about the sexual harassment of women show the danger of powerful male energy when it's not responsibly constrained and directed. Gun control laws and social codes around sexual behavior that are taught by families and in churches give necessary shape to the powerful energies of life that can create beauty if respected or destroy lives if abused. So we wrap the maypole in ribbons. The powerful energy it represents is contained, and then it's directed to ends that benefit the community. The bonfire is fun when it stays in its pit. When it breaks out into a wildfire, it's a disaster. Think of the lava that's currently bursting forth from the banks of Mauna Loa in Hawaii. The sun is the source of all life. It is beauty and power and creativity. And harnessed in a solar panel, it serves human needs. But if you fly too close, the sun's bright fire will melt your wax and burn your wings. Think of the passions in your life. How close do you fly to them? And how much do they consume you? What lights your fire? Are you aflame with passion for racial justice? Does your heart burn for health care for all? Are you incensed by our government's chaotic and contradictory immigration policies? Is there a fire burning under your seat to address the complex issues of affordable housing? Are your passions ignited with visions for the midterm elections and change in Washington? Well, good. Those are important issues, and there's work to do, and this is the season for work and for growth. But there are dangers there, too. Our passions can consume us. Our fire can turn to anger or rage, frustration, bitterness at the injustice of the world. The temptation is to strive higher, fly higher. There is always more work to be done. The nature of justice work is that every success reveals simply more arenas of injustice. So if we fail to acknowledge the possibly endless nature of work, then we will keep forcing our wings to lift us higher and higher until we burn out and we fall. The season of work and growth is just one of four, and I want you to take care of yourselves so that you can come back to the work refreshed and strong again. Other passions contain the same danger. Every passion does. Your passion might be for politics or traveling or good food and good drink. Your passion might be inherently dangerous, like skydiving or drag racing, or it might be a passion that isn't likely physically harmful, like, I don't know, knitting. But spiritually, the danger is the same. Do we consume our passions in spiritually healthy amounts, or do we let our passions consume us? Do our passions lift us from freedom, lift us to freedom from our desires so that we are satisfied and made peaceful? Or do our passions lift us beyond the safe zone into a place where we burn too brightly and risk flaming out? The Buddha recommended the middle way, neither overindulgence nor denial. Daedalus taught Icarus the same lesson, fly between the sea and the sun. Enjoy the bonfire, and if you feel like leaping, go for it, but measure the distance carefully between the flames and your feet. If you want a drink, have one. Reach for the sun, but not really. Keep the energy of your passions, the energy that makes them exciting and attractive, appropriately constrained and directed so that we master them and not they mastering us. And yes, I know, so do let me be careful to say out loud that sometimes for some people, even a little indulgence in some things is too much. Abstinence is the right choice for some of life's attractions. And for some passions, maybe knitting is one, you can probably knit all you want without getting into trouble. So take the lesson I'm giving. The middle way means avoiding the obsession, whether that's in overindulgence or in denial. Avoid the obsessing about them. Find the amount of engagement that suits your spiritual health. The pagan cycle of the year teaches us that the high energy of growth and work has its time, but it's only one season of the year. We must balance all four seasons. In the United States, our culture makes it easy to honor working and growing. We're encouraged to produce without ceasing. Our culture gives less honor to celebrating our achievements and saving for the future. We have one of the lowest saving rates worldwide. We give even less honor to the season of rest and quiet, an abysmally low vacation time in our workforce. We admire impulsive action and call it decisive, and give less honor to folks who do careful planning and preparation before they speak. In our church, we would do well to work with each other to help us resist that cultural pull to a life that is out of balance. Our spiritual task is to give each season its appropriate time. Summer's high heat cannot be sustained throughout the year. Energy cycles, the wheel of the year turns. As summer is now just beginning and the real heat awaits us in the coming months, let us enjoy the bright fire of today, the Beltane of maypole and bonfire and dancing. Let us also be careful in our celebration to not let loose the constraints that keep the fearsome powers of creativity directed toward our benefit. Let us follow closely the wise ones who travel the middle way. Spiritual health demands we free ourselves from the islands where we are exiled. Let us build great wings, but use them carefully, enjoying the warmth of the sun, but avoiding its burning heat. Enjoying when the wheel of the earth turns finally to autumn, the fruits of our work. And when we do at last come down, let it be as in winter, to a true and refreshing rest.